Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so today what we're up to is continuing in our story of the Akedah, of the binding of Isaac. What we've done so far is we went through the text. We did the Ramban. The Ramban, which is what we did last week. Nachmanides, as I mentioned, was much more text-oriented as far as his commentary in this particular passage dealing with the explanation. Rashi, as we're going to see today, I don't think we're going to get through all of Rashi. There's a lot here. But Rashi, we're going to see, is much more involved in this, at least here, as he is in general, quoting from Chazal, from the sages, and then the Midrashim, which of course fleshes out the story. But I wanted to see the Ramban first last week, and hopefully we'll review that a little bit as we go through Rashi. Okay, so let's go through with Rashi. What we're going to do is we're going to go through the verses. We'll briefly just comment on Ramban's when it is appropriate, and we'll learn Rashi's commentary. Starting from verse 1, here we go. Ready? And it happened after these words that God tested Avraham, and he said to him, Avraham, and he said, here I am. Verse that we're familiar with now, our opening verse. What we saw last week in the Ramban commented on the concept of the test, that a test is always from the perspective of the one who's being tested. The Ramban says, God knows what we're capable of, but in order to give us the reward, and not just for a good heart, but for the good deeds, he therefore tests us to bring us and our righteousness from potential to actualization. That was the comment that we saw yesterday from the Ramban, as we discussed all of life is really about taking our potential and actualizing it, making it real, bringing it out into the world. What we're going to see now in Rashi, and we have not yet seen addressed, is the opening phrase. It was after these things.
After these words.
Right, after, literally, right? Vayachar ha-divarim ha-eila. It is a good point. If you actually take a look at the Ramban's translation, you don't have it, I'm sorry. If you want to, I mean, if you guys want, I'll pass them around here again. Anybody wants? This is what we did last week. The blue sheets are your Ramban. If you do take a look, you will note the Ramban translates in the Chumash, the art scroll. Now, we have three art scroll Chumashim here. We have the art scroll Chumash, we have the art scroll Rashi, and we have the art scroll Ramban. And before art scroll, I don't know how anyone learned anything. Thank God we have art scroll.
What puzzled me is I thought that this followed Rashi, but in here it says after these things,
right?
Which is not.
So we're gonna we will actually see why that is in a moment. In other words, I'd like to point out we've done this. I've mentioned this a couple of times. It's worth mentioning always. So the Torah is so rich. The words, the Hebrew of the Torah, has so many complexities, so many different meanings, so many words and the nuances. When you write a translation, by definition, you're taking that which is infinite, the original words of Hashem, and you're choosing a facet of it. You have all these different facets, 70 facets to Torah. You put it in English, you got to choose. You can only say so much. And we're going to see exactly what they did here, which is very interesting. What's the Hebrew word? Vayhi achar ha-devarim ha-eila. So davar means several things. It means
words.
Dibor, ledaber, means to speak. Words. It also means
things.
Now, those two words are very connected. We're not going to talk about that right now. The fact that God speaks, and so to speak, things come into existence. That's why the word for things and the word for speak is the same. But leaving that aside, in regular language, we have two meanings of the word davar. Achar ha-devarim ha-eila. After these things, after these words. Which one is the more simple, in context, translation that we would expect here?
Would be things.
After these things.
Yeah, because
after these things. It was after these things, this thing happened. And which is why in your art scroll stone Chumash, they would translate it as things, because that's clearly the simple meaning of the words. It was after these things, which would leave us with the question of after
what things?
What took place that leads to this particular test of the binding of Isaac? This is a major question. The Torah is clearly begging us to ask that question by stating this test did not happen in a vacuum. It was after these things that this test took place. What was it? The Ramban himself did not comment. And now we're going to take a look at Rashi. Rashi is going to bring from the sages two opinions. We're actually going to see from Rashi later a third opinion as to what is the context of this particular test. Let's see Rashi has to say. Says Rashi in the first of your page 230 right there, after Acher Hadvarim Haile, after these words, we'll see why they translated as words in a moment. Yeshmi Rabbi Seinu Omer, there are those among our rabbis who say this means as follows, after the words of the Satan. Where does the Satan come in? Who was accusing Avraham and saying, out of the entire banquet that Avraham made, if you remember we discussed the feast that Avraham makes after he weans Yitzchak, and we pointed out, like, what an interesting thing that the Torah even mentioned that there was a weaning of Yitzchak, and now that he was going to be off on his own, and Avraham makes this big feast, the Satan comes to Hashem and says, he did not even offer before you not even one bull or one ram. No sacrifices. He just made a feast. No offerings of thanks to you. And the Satan is accusing Avraham. Omar lo Hashem, God says to him, Klum asa, did he make the banquet for any reason at all other than for his son? Was this not only because of the great appreciation that he has for his son and he made this feast? And if I were to say to him, sacrifice him before me, he would not refrain from doing so. End of the first opinion of the sages. Fascinating approach, quotes Rashi, that the Satan who says to Hashem, look at this Avraham, you gave him this child, and then it's as if he forgot about you. He makes this big feast for weaning the child, and he doesn't offer any sacrifices to you, the Satan says before God. And God says, oh, come on. This entire feast, was it not only for his son? His great love and appreciation for his son? And if I asked him for that very son, Avraham's love of me is so great that he would even do that. So it was Acher HaDevarim Ha'ele. The sages are saying, not after these things, but they're expounding as if it said, as if to translate it after these words, after the words that the Satan accused Avraham, Hashem says, he will do even this for me. Now, if we look at that statement, we say, what then is that? We ask this, the big question on this verse, on this whole episode. What is this test about? We know that the Ramban has told us it's about bringing the potential out into the actualization. But what does God want from Avraham? So the first thing we have here in Rashi is a very fascinating insight. What does God want from Avraham? It's really a response to the accusation of the Satan that Avraham did not bring sacrifices at the time of his feast. Now, I don't know whether or not the Medrash is meaning to say that there was something wrong, that that was in fact a problem, that Avraham should have and didn't, and that's what opened the door for the Satan to say, you know, it's like he forgot to say the Dvar Torah at the dinner. He like made this whole wedding, mm-hmm. and he's thanking everybody, and he forgot to thank you. To which, I don't know, I don't know whether or not there was something wrong, to which Hashem says, I'm not worried about my Avraham. If I were to ask for that very child, he would do that even for me.
I find this troubling. I find this, Rashi's point, troubling, in that it would appear that there might have been a little bet going on between God and Satan. See, I'm going to show you. Look.
So it is a little bit like, not as a bet, but it's the answer to the accusation.
Yeah.
So in other words, that is what's saying, which is why the impression a little bit to me is that the Satan is right. In other words, there was no sacrifices offered, and apparently there should have been, so that Hashem has to say, you can't get at my Avraham. I could even ask for that child and he would do so. Keep this in mind. It's a very interesting comment that Rashi quotes. But that's why, so where are the sages coming from? They're coming from the fact that the Torah said it was after these things, but the word that's used for things also means words. So the sages see it's connecting back to the previous episode, which is a little bit back, not too far away,
still
quite far away, of the feast and Avram's apparent lack of sacrifice, and therefore Hashem is responding by saying he would even do this. He would even give that very child himself. V'yesh omrim, Rashi quotes another opinion of the sages. There are those that say it means after the words of Yishmael. So again, the sages are picking up on the language of words, but it's after the words of Yishmael that he would pride himself over Isaac, because he underwent circumcision at the age of 13. And we've mentioned this several times as well. The commandment for Avram to circumcise himself and his children after him occurs when he's told about the subsequent birth of Isaac. A year from now you will have a child, and you will circumcise him. But Yishmael is already 13 years old at the time. So Yishmael goes through with the circumcision. If you remember, right, Avram is recovering from his own circumcision when the angels come to tell him he's going to have a child a year later. So he's already been circumcised. Yishmael has been circumcised at 13. Isaac has his circumcision at 8 days. And Yishmael feels that he's got a lot on Isaac because of this. And he would glorify and pride himself and say, I didn't object to a circumcision at the age of 13. You're only 8 days old. And Yitzchak would say back to him, do you try to instill fear in me through that which you did with only one organ? You gave up one organ. If the Holy One, blessed is He, would say to me, sacrifice yourself before me, I would not refrain from doing it. Now, this comment from the sages is coming from an entirely different angle. What's the most fundamental difference here?
Sibling rivalry?
Well, a little bit of sibling rivalry, which is a theme that runs throughout Sefer Bereishis.
Well, here it would imply that Yitzchak knew what was...
This is Isaac's test. It adds much to the element of Isaac's test. It's certainly going to still be Avram's test, and that Avram is the one who's being told and commanded to do so. But it's brought about because Isaac himself, Yitzchak, says, I'm willing to do this. You think that you're so great because you were willing to undergo a surgical procedure on one organ for God? I would give up my entire being for Him.
This is perhaps an answer to the question, why didn't Isaac say anything?
Right.
Excellent. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep these two comments. Very nice comment. We're going to keep these two comments on the table as we go through. So we have these two statements of the Zidna. Rashi is not quoting everything that the sages have to say. He's giving us those two starting points, both of which are from the sages, which means that there's still going to be a simple meaning that we don't have after these words. But where are the sages coming from? The fact that the Torah says it was after these things, and the word for things is the same word that's used for words, they come up with two conversations that happen which precipitated this particular test. Either the words of the Satan accusing Avraham of not particularly giving thanks after the feast for his son Yitzchak, or the words of Yitzchak himself claiming against the glorification that Yishmael was exalting himself with, that he was greater. Yitzchak himself saying, I would give up myself. And then Hashem comes to Avram and asks him to sacrifice his son. Which is why, this is going to get back to Dina's question earlier, Art Scroll Stone Chumash translates Vayhi Achar HaDvarim HaElu, after these things. That's the simple meaning. The Art Scroll Rashi translates it as you have on your page, it was after these words. Because since this is a specific translation that's really going with Rashi, and Rashi here clearly is expounding on it based on the sages that it means words, so they translate it here as words, even though the simple text, and even Art Scroll, who generally does go with Rashi, but not, that's so already, it seems like so much based on the Medrash that even they went with the simple meaning was after these things. Okay. So far, so good. Two very interesting statements from the comments from the sages. We'll keep them on the table, and we have another one still coming up. Yeah?
We spoke last week about the idea that there were three tests. The first two tests, Abraham did not, he argued with God. And in this third test of sacrificing, he didn't voice any objection. Could it be that this is,
Question
with Rashi and Rambam. I'm just saying, but when he talks about these things, could it be these tests? These have passed before, but now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that would be on going back to the on after these things. That would be coming after just after you were required to kick out Yishmael, which was certainly a test.
Right.
Sodom has not happened.
Right.
So that other issue which we discussed last week, we did discuss how when Avram is told about the destruction of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, he says, no way, and he fights for them. When he's told about kicking out his son Yishmael from his wife, he says, no way, until Hashem intervenes.
Right.
And here, where he's told by God about his own son, he doesn't offer anything. That is what we mentioned last week. So the simple meaning, I think, of after these things would be going back to the test of kicking out Yishmael. That was the previous story that we had. That would be the simplest meaning. It was somehow, after the story of the kicking out of Yishmael, we have this story. We will see in a moment that learning that chronologically might be a little difficult. We're going to see that in a moment. But it's a possibility. Yeah.
But the immediate previous thing that's mentioned is
right, the peace treaty with Abimelech. Right. So there's even a little story in between the story of Ishmael. So we can leave after these things a little bit open. What we have is, you know, the simplest meaning in the verses. What does the Torah mean to connect it to? It's not, is it the previous story, Avimelech, the peace treaty, the kicking out of Yishmael? How far back? Unclear. The sages see in it after these words that there was a conversation either between Yishmael and Yitzchak, in which Yitzchak is saying, I would be willing to sacrifice myself, or it's a conversation between the Satan and God, in which the Satan is accusing Avram and God says, do this. Very interesting approaches. We'll leave them on the table as we continue to go through. Let us move forward. So Hashem tests Avram. Avram responds with, Hineini. Rashi comments, here I am. Such is the response of the pious. It is an expression of humility and an expression of readiness to do the bidding of the one addressing them. Both of those, humility and readiness, is in the word Hineini. Now again, we're going to stress, I'd like to point out here already, this word Hineini appears several times in our story. This is not going to be the first time, not the second. We're going to find three times that Avram is going to use this phrase, which, as Rashi comments, is the phrase of the pious expressing humility and readiness. Ask of me, I am at your service. Okay, let's read through. What is the actual command? So as we mentioned, the whole command is encompassed in one verse. It is a long, complicated verse. We'll read it together in verse 2. And he said, please take your son, your only one whom you love. We noted many times already the three phrases. Your son, your only one, the one whom you love. And then he names him Isaac. Go to the land of Moriah and bring him up there as an offering upon one of the mountains which I shall tell you. That is the phrase. Take your son, bring him up as an offering upon one of the mountains that I shall tell you. Says Rashi, kach na. The language is please. Very interesting language for a command. Please. It's like, I beg of you, I'm asking you a favor to do this. Says Rashi, ein na el aloshon bakasha. Rashi starts, the word na is nothing other than an expression of a request. I'm requesting of you to do this. Now, why would God have to request of Avram? If it's a command, then God should say, do this, take him. And here he does it in a sense of please, as if he's prodding with him, pleading with him, begging him to do this. Says Rashi, God said to Avram, by using this word, I request of you, please stand firm for me in this trial, so that they should not say, the first trials were not substantial. Here we have another thing to put on the table as far as what was the purpose of this test. Here we have God pleading with Avram to stand firm in this test. This is, as Rashi himself holds, as the tenth of the ten tests, the sages and ethics of our fathers. In Pirkei Avos, learned that there were 10 trials, the Mishnah says, that Avram was tested. The Mishnah itself does not list what the 10 trials are. The commentators fill them in. Rashi has his opinion as to what the 10 are. It's actually mentioned there in the footnotes if you want to just take a look at them. But this is the tenth of the 10 tests. And Rashi sees in the language of kach na'ez bincho, please take from me your son. You've passed 9 already. Please stand firm in this one. If you don't make it in this one, there are those out there that are going to say, first 9, easy, not substantial, nothing substantive in them. This was the big test and he didn't make it. So that Hashem is almost, so to speak, begging and pleading with Avram to be able to fulfill it. So we have the two conversations which Rashi quoted as precipitating this test, and then within the test, Hashem pleading with Avram that people should say that there is something substantial there. Now this in itself is a very interesting concept. Now, let's say this is the hardest of the tests, which is fairly reasonable that they went up in increasing order. So if a person fails the most difficult test, do you say that therefore there was nothing, they weren't substantial in the earlier ones? The earlier ones were the earlier ones. This is more difficult.
But then this doesn't become about Abraham. This becomes about the Jewish people, elevating God before the Jewish people, or the Israelites.
And you're saying that as an answer?
Yeah, I'm saying if we accept this possibility,
mm-hmm.
that please do this, do it for me, then it's not really about Abraham.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of it, because the way that I'm reading it, it still is. It's Hashem saying, you know, you've done so much for me. You've expressed your love for me so many times and stood so many trials. But they're going to say about you that it was not substantial if you don't do this. So because I want you to be what I need you to be, or what you can be, even from your own perspective, do this one also.
And it also elevates God's position,
yeah.
among the people.
Okay. Right. Let's move on. So that's what we have in terms of the no, the please. Now we have the three phrases. That your son, your only son, the one you love, Isaac. Says Rashi, your son. When Avram heard this, take your son. He said to him, what do you mean? I have two sons. Flipping to the top of the next page, it's on the back side. So how can you tell me to take my son? Which one do you want? I have two sons. Therefore Hashem said to him the next phrase, your only one. Avram said, what do you mean my only one? This is an only one to his mother, and this is an only one to his mother. God said, the one you love. Avram says, what do you mean the one that I love? I love them both. And then Hashem says to him, Yitzchak. So that the sages see in this phrase a conversation. Avram says, Hineni, take your son. My son, I have two sons. They're both my only. The one I love them both. Yitzchak. Why? Says Rashi. And why did he not reveal to him that it was Yitzchak from the start? Says Rashi, so as not to suddenly confuse him, lest his mind become disoriented and addled. Confused. I'm not sure what the word addled means, but. Number one, we saw this in the Ramban as well. Yeah, what is the word addled? I'm not. Is that an older word?
Yeah. Middle English. It's Middle English. That's what we know.
Did I mispronounce
it? It was around at the time of Canterbury. So you're forgiven.
Okay, good. I'm going to turn 19 next week, so I'm really excited.
Before my time.
Thank you. They didn't talk about it in Charleston.
My mother, God rest her soul, used to use that word all the time. He's a little addle. He's a little off in the head.
More than famished. You mean mentally not quite all.
Yeah,
famished.
You know.
Okay, bottom line.
Famished me.
Okay. Bottom line, my youth will be excused, I hope. it just means you're not using the word enough. That's the problem.
Because we have the word famished.
Yeah, no, famished. For blinding, for yeah. Anyway, so what does Rashi say? Part of this was we saw this in the Ramban as well. The Ramban commented on this when he spoke about the fact that it took 3 days to get from the place where Avram is spoken to until the place where he's told to offer his son as a sacrifice. And the Ramban commented last week, why didn't Hashem send him off there? And then when he gets to the foot of the mountain, then tell him what it is that he wants. And the Ramban comment there also last week we saw, he wants Avram to be sitting on this for 3 days. He wants him to be going over it in his mind, that he knows what he's doing, that there's no sense of being addled into it, that he's completely confident, he's with his sound body, sound mind, and that he is willing to do so with his full sense of all of his faculties. So Rashi is going to come, we're going to see this a couple times in Rashi as well. It's going to be this theme that runs right through this whole story. Rashi already mentions in the very beginning, the first words that come out of God's mouth, Avram, take your son, your only son, the one you love, Yitzchak, that he's easing him into, that there's going to be something major happening, and that it's not going to be that he was startled into it. And another reason, Rashi adds, that God did not identify Yitzchak from the start was in order to make the commandment more precious to Avram and to give him reward for each and every statement regarding the command. Another idea that Rashi is going to comment on often, the fact that when you don't know something, it creates more of a allure towards it, more of a mystery. I don't know what I'm doing. So for every word that God says in which Avram doesn't yet know what it is that he wants from him, So it increases the amount of reward, it increases the love, the preciousness of the command to Abraham as he's being led on, but he doesn't yet know what exactly it is, he doesn't yet know where exactly he's going, what he's supposed to do. As the words continue, he gets more and more reward as it becomes more and more precious to him. Where should you go to the land of Moriah? This is Yerushalayim, Rashi comments, and he quotes a verse. And our rabbis explain, says Rashi, that the reason why Yerushalayim is called Moriah, because from there instruction, hora'ah, in the ways of the Torah emanates to Israel. The word Torah comes from the word to teach, to show, hora'ah. So Mount Moriah is the mount upon which the instructions were given, meaning not that where we see the Torah, not from Har Sinai, but Yerushalayim is going to be the center of Torah from the Beis HaMikdash, where the Sanhedrin would sit, the place where Torah would be taught, and therefore it was named Mount Moriah, Rashi comments. And he quotes from Unkelus, who referred to it as because of the Ketores, the service of the incense, which was there, from the words Mor, Ner, the Ushar, Besamim. So from the words Mor, from the other spices, he names it there. As we saw last week, the Ramban felt that it wasn't because of the incense, but because of the general avodah, the general service that was done. That's why it was called the Mount of Moriah. Okay, now what does God want from Avram? What does he want Avram to do with his son Yitzchak when he gets there? V'ha'aleu shom li'olah, raise him up as a sacrifice. The word in the Chumash that uses v'ha'aleu, aliyah, what does aliyah mean? To go up, right? When a person is called up to the Torah, it's called getting an aliyah. When a person moves to Eretz Yisrael, it's called making aliyah, because you're raising up. Physically, it used to be that before it was raised during the destruction time of the temple, in the land of Israel, the Yerushalayim was actually the highest mountain. It was raised down. It's not any longer the highest mountain in the surrounding areas. But you would physically go up, and you would certainly spiritually go up, in the same way as many shuls create a bima in a way that you actually step up to get an aliyah to the Torah. Even where we have the soup bowl layouts, but then on the way down, when you get to the very bottom, and then you stand up to actually get to the table to actually get an aliyah. So God says to Avram, V'ha'alehu, raise him up as an offering. And Rashi points out, he did not say to him, Shchatehu. He did not say to Shechtim. The command originally given was not actually to sacrifice to slaughter him, because the Holy One, blessed is He, did not want him to slaughter him. Rather, God commanded Avram Leha'aloso, to bring him up to the mountain with the intention to make of him an offering, giving him the status of an offering. Umisha Haleyu, but once he was raised up, Amalo, God sent to him, Horidehu, take him down. So that the test would be, from the beginning, not to see if you would actually carry it through and sacrifice your son, but would you carry it through with the intention of sacrificing your son, even though the words that I gave already in the beginning have the ability to be understood that it doesn't actually mean that. Meaning, when Avram hears this, he hears, bring him up as a sacrifice. He doesn't hear, go through the motions, he hears, take him up as a sacrifice. And it's clear throughout the whole story, he's going there with that intention. Rashi's telling us here is that when the angel calls out at the very end of the story, with the knife is extended, and his arm is beginning to go down, and the angel says, stop! And we ask the question, well, if I got a command from God to do it, how do I know to listen to an angel of God not to do it? These are not diametrically opposed commandments. One is not saying yes and one is saying no. God says, Haleo Shom Li'olah, and the angel then comes and interprets, V'ha'aleu, is you've done it. You have brought him up. And Rashi's telling us already here in the beginning of the story that the word that was used will fit so that when the angel says to him, it's over, stop, I don't want any more, he's not saying against that which God told him to do. He's actually saying, you have already fulfilled that which God has told you to do, and you have brought him up, and now I tell you to take him down, and that's therefore a new commandment. So we will keep that in mind as we try to answer as many questions along the way as we go through the Rashis as to how that is going to be addressed. One of the mountains, the Holy One, blessed is He, makes the righteous anxious about the details of their mission, and only afterwards reveals the details to them. Rashi here is again addressing, there is so much ambiguity in this particular mission. When you think what we've already seen, we're in verse 2 now, but we know that when God first speaks to Avram, He gives him this, take your son, your only son, the son you love, Yitzchak. What should you do with him? Bring him on the, where? On one of the mountains where I will show you. So there's just a lot of go somewhere, I'll show you later, which is what we're going to see. Rashi is going to quote this. We find that in the very next parsha, in the beginning of this parsha, Lech Lecha, it's actually the previous parsha, in which God says to Avram, go to the land that I'll show you. There's a lot of just, you go, and I'll show you later. Sort of like our lives, right? You go, later I'll tell you exactly what it is that I need from you. Later I'll tell you exactly what you're supposed to accomplish. But you keep going. You just do what I need you to do. So we have that already. That's deeply embedded in our national spiritual history, that these major tests that Avram is given are filled with ambiguity. I want you to go, and I'll fill you in on the details as we go along. Why? All of this, says Rashi, is in order to increase their reward. So that they don't know, so that they're not sure what it is that they're going to, and that they go anyway. Jewish people head off into a desert. What are we going to eat? Don't worry. What are we going to drink? Don't worry. That's how we go. That's our national heritage, is God tells us where to go and we go, and we don't have all the answers. We're not sure what's going to happen. Similarly, we find God being vague about details. The land that I will show you, that's the beginning of, that's Avram's first communication. Pick up from your homeland, go to the land that I will show you. We find in regards to Jonah, the owner of the prophets, and proclaim over her the proclamation, which I will tell you. Go to the city. There are wicked people over there. And when you get there, I'll tell you what to say. See, just, Rashi's pointing out this is a theme that you sometimes find, and it's all about increasing the reward in which the one being sent does not exactly know what it is that he is doing, and he goes anyway. Naaseh v'nishra. This is what we did as a people. We will do, and then we'll find out what you want. So I don't know what you want, but we're first declaring naaseh. We're going to do it, and then we're going to hear what it is that you want from us. Okay, that's verse 2. That sums up all of that. Was just the first verse, which includes within it the entire command of what Hashem says to Avram. Taking the child, we find two references that Rashi makes about keeping things not clear, unclear, ambiguous, so that the schar, the reward, should be increased, the preciousness of the mitzvah should be there. And the language Rashi pointed out of the ha'aleihu, you will raise him up as a sacrifice, not actually sacrifice him. Okay, so far so good. Verse 3, let's just read it inside, it's on the top of 232. Avram arose early in the morning and he saddled his donkey. He took his two young men with him, and Isaac, his son. He split the wood for the offering, stood up and went to the place of which God had spoken to him. So the comments that we had is, we see clearly he's saddling his own donkey early in the morning. We have the two people that he takes with him. And we have all of these verbs, right? He saddled his donkey, he took his young men, he split the wood, stood up, he went to the place in which God had spoken to him. Says Rashi, a couple of comments. Vayashkem, Avram arose early. Nizdarez lemitzvah, he moved promptly to perform the commandments. Concept that we find Zrizin, Makdim, and lemitzvah, those who are Zrizin, those who move with alacrity to fulfill the commandments as early as possible, which is why we generally, as far as mitzvahs go, we try to fulfill them as early as possible. We try to do a bris milah early in the morning, put on our talis and our tefillin as soon as we wake up in the morning. Mitzvahs should be done early in the morning as soon as possible. We see Avram waking up early to be able to perform this commandment. And he saddled his own donkey, says Rashi. He himself saddled his donkey. And he did not command one of his slaves to do it, as a man of his stature normally would. Rashi says a beautiful phrase. She'ahava, love, mikalkelas hashura, interrupts the correct order of things. Literally means it makes crooked the line. That which should be straight, love makes crooked. Meaning people will deviate from their normal behavior when acting out of love. Rashi uses the same phrase when it comes to the other time we see this phrase of someone waking up early to saddle his donkey. Who else wakes up early to saddle his donkey?
Bilam.
Bilam, who's hired to curse the Jewish people. when he's given permission finally to embark on his journey. So the Torah says he wakes up early in the morning and saddles his donkey. Rashi makes the same comment there. There's a reason with alacrity he woke up early in the morning. And then he borrows this phrase. He says, Hasina, hatred, mikalkelas es hashura, makes that which should be straight and makes it crooked. There should be a certain process of behavior. And what Rashi's telling us, and strong emotions cause irrational behavior, inappropriate behavior. This is the shura, this is the line, this is what should happen, this is the course of an event, of events. You're a person of stature, you should have someone else do behaviors X, Y, or Z. If you are emotionally charged, and Rashi uses it on both sides, because the Torah uses the exact same phrase, Vayashkem baboker vayachavosh es chamaro, he woke up early, by Avram, same phrase by Bilam, and Rashi says they're emotionally charged, one with love, and one with hatred. But when you're filled with it, you will do things that others who are not filled with that emotion will look at it and say, now why would he do something like that? And that's the difference between irrational, between rational thinking and emotionally charged thinking. And Rashi's saying it so beautifully, it can go on either side of the emotional spectrum. It doesn't mean if you're filled with love, you'll do things that are irrational. You're so filled with an ava, a care, a concern, a wanting to be with a certain person or a certain entity, a group, you'll do things that people say like, well, that's weird. And if you're filled with a passionate hatred, same thing. It becomes irrational. You lose yourself. Mekalkeles hashura. Ruins, makes crooked the line. Beautiful phrase. Beautiful, beautiful phrase. Who does he take with him? Two Na'arif, his two young men. Says Rashi, who were they? Yishmael and Eliezer. As Eliezer, we know, we're familiar with, his trusted servant. And Yishmael is his son, who's 14 years older than his beloved Yitzchak. Avram had them escort him. Now, Rashi is bothered by, why are these, there's a question that we asked. What is the purpose of these young men? Why are they here? And how do we know that we have to ask that question? Because when they get close to the mountain, if you remember, what does Avram say to them?
Stay here.
Okay, well then, what's the purpose of them? So Rashi says, the Torah must be telling us something that they're there for. And he comes up with a very, very interesting comment as to why they are here. For a man of importance is not permitted to embark on a journey without two men to accompany him. Why? For if one needs to tend to his bodily functions, needs to use the bathroom, and therefore he will distance himself, right? They didn't have rest stops along the way. When you needed to use the restroom, you'd find an open field and you'd walk off a distance from your colleagues. He will therefore distance himself and the other one will be with him. If a person of stature would travel with only one person, when that one person needs to excuse himself, then the person in stature is left by himself. And a person of stature should not be left by himself, so he travels with two. And the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that he took the two people with him, even though they serve no purpose, because as soon as they get close to the mountain, he says to them, stay here. So why are we told about them? Rashi says, because it's teaching us a lesson in proper decorum when you travel as an Adam Choshev. When you're a person of stature, an important person who travels, you take two people that you should always be accompanied. Now, there is an obvious problem that I personally am very bothered by, that I'm sure you are bothered by, and that is?
Why Yishmael?
Meaning?
Yishmael, who has so many difficulties with Yitzchak.
He's gone. The previous chapter was the expulsion of Yishmael. So we have the two questions, which we can put them both together. A, just, you know, hashkafically, that what an interesting thing that Yishmael, who's clearly become the antagonist of Yitzchak, why should he be chosen? More so, if we're to read the Torah as going in order, which is our default position, unless you think you know otherwise, well, Yishmael's been expelled already. He's not there. And it's achar ha-dvarim ha-eila, it's after these things, so it certainly would seem to be going chronologically speaking, so why is he here? Now, the Torah itself doesn't say that he's there. Who's telling us that at Yishmael? These are the sages commenting, the Rashi's quoting. So what did the sages see that would, if the simple reading of the text would tell you that Yishmael is not even there anymore, what did they see that in these phrases that he took his two men with him, that they go out of their way to bring Yishmael in, which means that we sort of have to learn it as being almost out of order. This comment, this seemingly innocuous comment of the sages that says, who was the one that was with Avram? It was Yishmael, forces us into one of two opinions. Now hold on one second. There are one of two options. You tell me which one you think makes more sense. Number one, the Torah is going out of order. Torah is going out of order, and that this episode actually took place before the episode of Yishmael, which we'll see for many reasons really doesn't work very well. The other option is, how old was Yitzchak when Yishmael got kicked out?
He was 2 years old.
Right. It was right. It seemed like it was little. He was weaned.
Right.
He was 2 years old. He makes a big feast. And it's shortly thereafter, the very next verse says that Sarah sees Yishmael playing around and says, we got to get this kid after. It seems from this age, it's 16, 17. So he's in that age. And Yishmael was Yitzchak was 2 or 3. How old is Yitzchak at this story?
We're told
37. Right, because at the end of the story, Sarah is going to die, and we're going to be given her ages, and when sages say Yitzchak was 37. How many years have gone by in between the story of the expulsion of Yishmael and this next episode?
35.
Significant amount of time. A significant amount of time has gone by, which means that the sages are hinting to us with this seemingly innocuous comment when they say that one of the two lads that Avram took with him was Yishmael, and you and I should read it and say, Yishmael, but just 3 minutes ago we read the verse, it's 10 verses prior. And Yishmael is kicked out of the house of Avraham, and he goes to dwell in the desert, and he gets married, and he starts his own family. What's he doing in Avraham's house? Hey, wait a minute, when you put the years together, 35 years have gone by in those 10 verses. Between the verse of Avram kicking out Yishmael and the pact that he makes with Avimelech, which we didn't read, which is a couple of verses, and this, it was after these things, 35 years go by. And apparently, during that time, Yishmael ends up back in the house of Avram.
He did to shoot him.
That's what it would sound like.
So, we're referring to a 35 or 37-year-old man, and then Ishmael would be 50.
Correct.
As lads.
Excellent. So when we put this all together, we have them as lads. Not only that, let's add just as far as figuring all of this out, the two comments that Rashi made, that we studied, the very first comments, it was after these words. What were the words that the sages saw that this episode comes after? Either it was the words of the Satan, who claimed what?
Who claimed that Abraham wouldn't be willing to sacrifice.
Because when he made the big feast, when Yitzchak was weaned, 35 years ago, he didn't bring a sacrifice to. Right, we're not. If it, right, given the fact that we put all their ages together, if Yitzchak is really 37, aside from the comment that we just read that Yishmael was one of the two people there, the sages say that Yitzchak was 37. He was 2 when he was weaned. He wasn't weaned at 35. We know that for sure. So then we just have to work through. It was after. What was the other comment that the Rashi made? What were the words that precipitated this particular test?
Yishmael
was glorifying himself, saying, "I had my circumcision when I was 13. You were only 8 days." Again, 36, 37 years before, he's still going with that, right? So either way, there's a lot to try to put together between what the sages are seeing was what precipitated this particular test and how old Yitzchak is. And now we see Yishmael popping up again that the sages say he was one of the lads. And we'll answer your question of, they're not little boys anymore. If we put all the numbers together, Yishmael's in his 50s. Yitzchak himself is a 37-year-old man.
Yeah.
I can tell you, that's very old.
Even then it was old.
I don't even know what 37 looks like. So, I mean, that's like...
But Eliezer is also old.
Eliezer is for sure right. Also not a young man. Yeah, so okay. But in any case, but I bring to your attention that Rashi does comment that the two lads, one was Eliezer, one was Yishmael. So we're going to have to say something about Yishmael. So to say it's out of order is going to create even more problems that this happened before that incident. Particularly when we get to the end of the story and the sages say that Sarah dies at the end of this incident, you can't then go back and have her telling Avraham to kick Yishmael out, because then, you know, we're going to run into that. So it seems like it is in order, it's chronological, just that there are many years that have transpired between these two events, which is going to raise some interesting issues with how Chazal see it. So as we go along, we are continuing to raise lots of questions. But let us continue on, shall we? So have a few more minutes. Let's see if we can get another verse in. Vayu Vakon, he split the wood. Now this was a comment that the Ramban made last week. What was the Ramban bothered by, if you remember?
Why is he splitting the wood 3 days
before? Right, why is he splitting the wood now? He's got 3 days to go, which is 3 days of schlepping. Why in the world is he doing it? And the Ramban gave two answers, which are really the same type of answer, both of which had to do with he didn't want to have to deal with it. He didn't want to get there and have to be to Dreitz. Where am I going to find the wood? The wood's not going to be viable. It's not going to be kosher to be used as a sacrifice. So that the Ramban's approach was the Torah's pointing out, and again, this was that same thing that we had seen several times and a couple times already this morning. Avram, both the Torah and Avram does not want him to be of unstable mind as he goes through this test. This is going to be a test which is going to stand on the behalf of the Jewish people for all of eternity, and it's going to be done of sound body and sound mind. So the Ramban comment, he's already splitting the wood to make sure that it was taken care of, it was done, even though it meant schlepping it. That's what your two young lads are for. They'll take the wood, but we're going to take care of it already here as well. Rashi does not really have anything to comment on it that's of relevance to us, but just mentioning that as a chazar, as a review of what we did last week. Okay, verse 4. On the third, I'm reading the verse on the top of page 233. On the third day, Avram raised his eyes and he saw the place from afar. 3 day travel, he lifts up his eyes and he sees the place. Now we mentioned, what do you mean he sees the place? Hashem didn't tell him where to go. He said, go to the land of Moriah, and there, upon one of the mountains that I will tell you, or show you, you will offer him up. Says Rashi, on the third day, Lama Eichar Mila Haroso Miyad, why did God hold off from showing it to him immediately? Why so much time? And again, Rashi comments so that they should not say that God bewildered and confused Avraham unexpectedly and addled his mind. Ah, I'm familiar with that. I've heard that before. He addled his mind. Wait till I go home and start using this around my house. He addled his mind. But if Avraham had time to consult his heart, he would not have done it. People would say, yeah, of course Avraham did it. He did it because he was confused. He did it because he was adult. He did it because he didn't have time to think. Maybe that's where that came from. In other words, people got, like, addled his mind. They started saying, what does addled mean? They must be saying out of his mind. That's what happened.
Well, how would you have translated?
Confused. I would try to find the fancier word for confused, which I would have come up with adult.
But this probably means
Taraf. Taraf Daito literally means his ach taraf taraf. When Yaakov says about his son Yosef that he was torn asunder, ach taraf taraf Yosef, my son Yosef has been torn apart. That's what a treif. In other words, a treifa is an animal that has a rip or a hole in its lung. So taraf daito would mean that his mind was, you know, ripped apart, so to speak, literally. That it wasn't so right. So when you're an adult, everybody knows that. That's just me. Okay, so again,
I can just see you pulling on it line. I can just see.
My next sermon.
He's got a lot more classes than that comes up.
My next sermon, I'm going to structure an entire sermon around trying to get the word out all day.
Numerous times. And then look at the other rabbis and say, right?
Yeah. So Rashi here is commenting again, what's with the 3 day journey, like we saw in the Ramban? Everything here about this test is about Avram being of sound mind, so that no one can claim that he did it, but that he did it because he was confused and he wasn't clear in his mind. Now, and then he saw the place. So we asked the question, when did he saw the place? How did he know where it was? So Ramban made two comments. Either that God showed him and we weren't told about it. I think the Ramban says, right?
Okay.
Ramban said there was a cloud or something.
Did he quote that also? That's what Rashi is about
yeah,
to say. Okay, so Rashi here mentions that as well. So Rashi says he saw a cloud affixed to the mountain. I wasn't sure if I remember that from Rashi or from the Ramban. So Ramban added to this, or maybe he told him, we just don't know about it. But what Rashi goes with is that there was a cloud, this divine presence resting upon one of the clouds, so that Abraham saw that and went further. Now what Rashi does not quote, and will not quote, I believe, yeah, the Gemara, however, records, and Rashi just doesn't mention it, that when Abraham sees the cloud, he says to his son Isaac, "Do you see what I see?" And Isaac says, "Yeah, I see this cloud." Then he turns to his two lads and he says, "Do you see what I see?" And they say, "No, what are you talking about?" He says, "You know over there, do you see that?" And they say, "No, I didn't see anything." And he says, "Okay, you guys then wait here, because you clearly are not supposed to go any further, but I'm taking my son Yitzhak with me, and we're going on further to that cloud. We're going to go perform some service, and we will then return to you." Okay, that's Rashi as to verse 4, and we will leave it at here, and then we will pick up with this Mirtz Hashem next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.